Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Movie Digest. I am JQ.
And I'm Finn.
And today it's our top five goodbyes. So as some of you listeners may
have
noticed...
Can I just say that before we start, we've got a real cheat to say welcome to this week's episode of the Movie Digest. Welcome to this year's episode of the Movie Digest.
This year's episode, yes. So some of you may have noticed that we haven't done an episode in a while. It's just been too difficult to arrange.
That, and also the last film that we reviewed was whatever it was called, the last Star Wars film.
The Last Jedi.
Yeah. And I've been so angry about it, I haven't been able to record any other movie podcasts.
It wasn't that bad.
It was. And the thing is, I actually listened to part of it back for some reason. Not in a narcissistic way, but fairly recently. And I was actually far too kind to that movie.
Really?
Because I remember feeling undecided.
Okay.
When I came out, just because I wanted it to be so good. And it's dreadful.
Wow.
So there we go.
Okay, anyway, well, maybe we'll come back to that a bit later on. There's some venom in there. We'll come back to that
nice
later
little
as well.
Segue.
Oh, lovely.
He hasn't lost it, ladies and gentlemen.
I never had it. So I thought it'd be fitting just to wrap up this season of the Movie Digest. We're doing top five goodbyes. Now, it's not top five endings, because we've done that before.
We have.
I probably chose Die Hard. I can't remember. So I thought we'd do top five goodbyes. So that's a character leaving the film, any point in the film, not necessarily at the end. Could be at the beginning.
Could be.
Like Up. Could be anything like
could
that.
Could be.
Yeah. So it's just last time. I think you can go first.
Okay. Yeah. I had to stipulate quite strongly whether this was going to be goodbyes or endings, because as we've already said, we did a top five endings. It was a couple of years ago, was it? Just before I went travelling, I think.
That possibly,
was
a few years
ago. Goodness me. Okay. So there might be some crossover. There's definitely one that I remember being a crossover on that list from endings and goodbyes. But let's just see where this goes. Number five for me is Inside Out. When we bid farewell to Bing Bong.
Oh, very good. Yes.
Halfway through. I'm sure we've mentioned quite a few times on the pod the brilliant YouTube channel Honest Trailer.
Yeah.
And the episode for Inside Out is one of my favourites, where the guy, obviously putting it on, can't keep it together through the bit where he says, "Let me say goodbye to Bing." Goodbye to Bing Bong. It's incredibly moving. Yep. I think this is the thing that Disney does so well, or certainly used to do, I think, an awful lot better, and that's without a nostalgic lens to it. I just think the story writing and the emotional chords that they hit through a lot of the stuff from the mid-90s, even Toy Story, the first one's a hugely emotional film, through to Toy Story 3 and everything in between. They had some great ones. And then it went off the boil for a little bit, but Inside Out for me was a real return to form.
It was, yes.
And I think it's one of those things when you go through a change in your life of moving through a different season, so becoming a parent or whatever, it kind of resonates in a different way than when you were a kid watching these kind of things. Mm-hmm. But that is something that no matter how old you are, because the word nostalgia, I think in the Greek, comes from literally a mourning of your past.
Oh.
I think that's what it literally translates as. So that nostalgia, that feeling of the loss of that innocence or that part of your childhood is quite profound.
Yes.
And that whole bit about, you know, the imaginary friend, and not everybody had an imaginary friend, but just the...
I didn't, no.
The loss
of... Now.
The loss of that part of your childhood. It's a really moving thing, and I just think they did it brilliantly. So that's number five. Number four is the goodbye, which is also at the end of Before Sunrise.
I knew there would be one of those films in there.
Yeah. I've talked about these films at length, so there's been three of them. There's a trilogy of them. Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, and Before...
Sunrise Returns?
Before Dawn, or Before... I don't know, something else. But they all deal with the different stages, and these films are made 7 years apart from each other. This is the first one.
Yeah.
About this kind of like young, idealistic couple who meet each other in a European city. One day, end up spending the whole day and night together.
Yeah.
And then they have to go their separate ways, and they try to put in a plan for when they're next going to see each other. And it'll be a year to the day at that exact place.
Yeah.
And you're kind of left to wonder what happens. Are they going to meet up? Are they not? And it's just this really beautiful, kind of melancholic, but as well optimistic end to that film. And that kind of sets a tone again for what happens in the later films. And it's a Richard Linklater film, so the nuances in the kind of human condition and the pathos of the characters in that film is astonishing. I don't think anybody really does that like Richard Linklater does.
Yep.
Which leads me on to another Richard Linklater film, which is at number three.
Hello.
Which is Boyhood. So have you seen Boyhood?
I don't know.
I haven't seen that.
I haven't seen that.
Boyhood is the film that they made with the same actor going for, is it 12 years? They go from 6 to 18.
Oh, yeah.
And they filmed them once every year.
Yeah.
With the same actors. So it's got Patricia Arquette and Ethan Hawke. And a really great cast. And
it's good job they all grew up to be famous actors.
Well, they were already established when they started filming. But they... is one of, what I love about Richard Linklater films is kind of nothing happens, but everything happens. It's literally just about the journey of growing up.
Yeah.
And there are beats in it, you know, like certain things happen at certain points in the movie. But there's an incredibly profound scene near the end where, not too many spoilers, this happens fairly early on. The mum and the dad of the boy separate fairly early on. And
yeah,
it might even be when he's in the first like year or two of his, of when they're following him for 6 or 7 years old. And they kind of grow apart and all that kind of thing. And the mother character is played by Patricia Arquette, who's absolutely outstanding and is incredibly strong, this brilliant matriarch to the family and all the things that she goes through. And then her son goes through de facto because she's with him. There's a really brilliant scene near the end. This isn't a massive spoiler because it's not giving away anything that's gone before, but it gets to the point where the kid is old enough to leave home and he's going to go to college, go to uni. And there's an incredible scene where Patricia Arquette is kind of at the table in their house and she's just like, this is it. This is it. And it's the son's not on purpose being nonchalant, but he's just like, oh, that's me away. I'm away now. And she just is, I think, quite overcome by the emotion of that moment. Like, this person that she's raised, gave birth to and raised, is now leaving the homestead. And she's just, like, trying to articulate how difficult this moment is. Because she's just, like, it's arrived. And it's kind of arrived unexpectedly, even though she always knew it was coming.
Nah.
And it's, she's just like, is this it? Is this it? It's like, what happens now? Like, and it kind of, like, puts her in a bit of a quandary of what happens to her, what her life's been about up until this point and stuff. It's just, it's an incredible, incredible scene. I think she actually won the Oscar for it that year, or was certainly nominated for a performance, and she's incredible. Moving on to slightly more terra firma.
Oh, here we
go. As we move into the big bit. I just have to do an action and see if JQ knows what I'm doing here, and then I'll explain.
Okay.
Number two.
For those who are not watching at home, Finn is slowly lowering his thumb down into some hot lava. Da, 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 da. Goodbye, John Connor. Da, da, da.
It is, of course, the goodbye of the T-800 in Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
It's a good goodbye.
I've definitely mentioned this a few times, and I think this was even in top five endings. It's one of, if you grew up at a certain point, there's nobody that I know between certain ages that doesn't like Terminator 2 or Terminator. But Terminator 2 is just like, it is one of the best films ever made in terms of like how groundbreaking it was for the special effects, for the action, for the story. It's just incredible.
Special effects still hold up.
They do.
Like Jurassic Park.
Yeah. But the, and even with an incredibly annoying child actor, It's an incredible movie. But the bit at the end, it just, I can never separate it now as well from the bit in space. That's the opening scene in space where Simon Pegg's character, it's, for those of you that have never seen Space, it's an incredible TV show around about the turn of the millennium on Channel 4, and it's all on 4OD. You should totally watch it. It's slightly dated now, but it still holds up. But there's a bit where he's having an argument with his girlfriend out the window of her flat, and he's on the street, and he's like, "You think I'm unemotional? I cried like a child at the end of Terminator 2, you know, with the thumb and the molten. Is there someone else?" And I can't separate it from that. But it's just nothing encapsulates that kind of like 90s thing of a robot dying, giving the thumbs up as it gets lowered into molten lava. But it's not quite at the top of my list. So number one for me is the end scene. This is a bit of a spoiler, but this film's been out for 20 odd years.
Right.
So if you haven't seen it by now, that's a shame. But it's the kind of the last scene from Good Will Hunting.
Ah, I have not seen Good Will Hunting.
You really should.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite films, just for a load of different reasons. And it actually, to me, it gets better the older it is. I think, again, it's part of that thing of like growing up and you see things in a different way. Robin Williams is absolutely phenomenal. Of course, it was a script written by
Batman and Jason Bourne.
It was, yeah. Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, and directed by Gus Van Sant. It's just this really, I think, quite an original story. Like, it's amazing. This maths prodigy genius who was brought up kind of as an orphan in foster homes and stuff, had a horrific upbringing, but is like genius level intellect. And through the film, it kind of like, he basically gets to the point where he's like, will he live up to the potential that he has, but at the same time sacrifice what he holds so dear, which is his friends, because that's literally his family.
Yeah.
And will he open himself up to the potential ridicule of a long-term relationship? He meets Minnie Driver halfway through the film, but there's a really brilliant scene kind of about halfway through the film, getting towards the end, where they're working on a building site, and it's a scene between Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, so Will and his best friend Chucky, and he is trying to get the point across that he was asked to go for this really high profile government job. And he's like, I turn it down.
Yeah.
And he's like, the reason I turn it down basically is because it's like, you know, to me, there's more nobility in working on a building site or being a janitor and stuff like that. And his best mate says, that's fine to have that kind of nobility basically. But he's like, it's an absolute slap in the face to men like me. Cause he's like, I'll wake up tomorrow and I'll be 50 and I'll still be here. I'll still be on this building site. This is as good as it gets for me. He's like, I've got a job, great, but I will never be anything more than this. You have the potential to do what we all dream of doing, and you're doing nothing with it. And he's like, the best part of my day is when I come to pick you up in the morning, because Chucky's the only one that can drive a car. The best part of my day is when I come to pick you up in the morning, and there's like a little gap between when I knock on your door and when you come out. And I just think sometimes, like, you're not going to be there. You'll have left. No goodbye, nothing, whatever. You've just gone. And he's like, because that actually would be easier for me than watching you piss your life away here. And then at the end of the film,
I've got a little tear in my eye now. That's quite emotional.
And then at the end of the film, kind of like, no surprises, that's where it comes back. So it kind of gets to that point, and that's kind of how Will exits the movie.
Okay.
And there's this really beautiful bit where I'm not doing the whole goodbyes. You should watch the film. There's a whole goodbye with the Robin Williams character in there as well, which is all part of this extended scene. But it does end up that Chucky goes to his house, he knocks on the door, and there's no answer. It's empty inside. And then it cuts to where Will is and what he's doing now.
Afghanistan fighting.
To me, it's perfect. And I think as well as I don't mind happy endings to movies, but I just, it always resonates more if it's something that's a bit more realistic.
And yes.
To me, I just, it's like so perfect that there wasn't this kind of huge emotional scene. Actually, by downplaying the scene, it heightens the emotion for me.
Yeah.
And to me, it's just, it's the most brilliant goodbye. Very close to being on my list, though, was the scene from Dumb and Dumber at the airport near the start, where he's like, I hate goodbyes. Shh, just go. So that's my top five.
That's a very good top five.
Thank you.
And very little crossover.
Oh, good.
So, my top five. Number five, E.T.
It's just been so long since I've seen E.T. I can't quite remember the end.
I think I cried when I was a little boy.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just Elliot saying goodbye to his best friend and...
Yeah.
E.T. And his finger and...
Phone home.
Phone home.
The glowing finger, yeah.
Apparently there was a sequel written where they come back and there's some sort of... They go on some sort of murderous rampage or something. Like, Steven Spielberg wrote this awful sequel because he didn't want to have a sequel.
Uh-huh.
So he wrote something so bad that the studio was just like, nah, you're
that is genius. Right. And yet the sad thing is most days people still write the worst possible sequel, but it gets made.
Exactly. Apart from Terminator 2.
True.
Which is number 4 on my list.
Oh, come on.
Oh, how these segues are just coming out of nowhere. It's amazing. Yeah, so Terminator 2 is obviously amazing. I remember watching a making of Terminator 2.
Yeah.
And they were doing behind the scenes of the power plant thing at the end with all the molten lava.
Yeah.
And then this stagehand just sort of leans over and just puts his hand in the water and moves it around. Obviously, it's just a massive yellow light under some water. Yeah. But my 12-year-old brain just went, oh my God, he's touching lava. What's going on?
But when he pulls out just a skeleton for a hand.
Oh,
okay.
Oh no, it was real. That's number 3. It was Castaway.
Again, a film I haven't seen for so long.
It's where Wilson floats away.
That is, I mean, the thing is, even if you haven't seen the film,
yeah,
most people would know, Wilson,
yeah.
Wilson, I'm sorry.
And the ball with the face on it,
yeah,
which remarkably like the helmet in, Finn's helmet in Star Wars.
It does, actually.
yeah, because most of the film, that's his only people, it's the only thing he talks to in the whole film.
Yeah.
And then suddenly he's drifting away. And just like, oh my God, he's losing his best friend. Mm. It's E.T. all over again. But then he has to get rid of the ball because otherwise he would be an absolute madman to be walking around with a ball with a face painted on it. obviously, it wouldn't have been as good if there was a Schlesinger ball.
No.
Schlesinger!
Although, actually, there is a make of tennis ball called Wilson.
Is there?
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go.
We may not be entertained, but we're learning. number 2 is, well, it's got two goodbyes in this film.
Oh,
controversially.
Okay.
It was Toy Story 3.
Okay.
So we've got the first goodbye, which is where all the toys are sliding down into the incinerator.
Yeah.
And when I was watching it this cinema, I was just like, I was genuinely upset.
Mm.
It's just that they're all going to die.
Yeah.
How are they going to get out of this?
Yeah.
And they're sort of holding hands and accepting death. The toys just going, well, okay, this is it. And then the big claw comes down and saves them all. And then the second goodbye at the end, Andy says goodbye to his toys and hands them on to the next generation.
Mm. There's somebody cutting onions in here.
It's almost as emotional as when you just did the ending of Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a tear in my eye then. but my favourite goodbye is One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Tremendous film. I haven't seen it in such a long time, but it's quite moving.
Yeah.
As well.
It's like, because for those of you who haven't seen it, Jack Nicholson's character is like this crazy guy, crazy as in sort of over the top in the loony bin. And then he just pisses everyone off so much that they lobotomize him. And then the chief comes over, says goodbye, smothers him, smashes something through the window and walks out.
Mm.
It's just like, whoa!
Yeah, it's a full-on movie. Yeah. It's weird because it's weirdly triumphant in bits as well. Like,
yeah.
You know the bit where they all kind of like break out, so to speak, because they're all free to leave. It's just none of them choose to, except for Murphy.
Yeah.
But they all kind of break out and commandeer a boat and they're like sailing around and stuff. And it's wonderfully uplifting, but hugely traumatic at the same time because all the characters have, what a cast as well. Like, because Danny DeVito's in it.
Yeah.
Christopher Lloyd is in it. It's incredible. The ending of that is just, because I think you think as well, the Nurse Ratched character, you just, even though Murphy's like, kind of grotesque and very over the top and a bit disgusting, he does bring out the best in his fellow inpatients.
Yeah.
But he brings out the absolute worst in Nurse Ratched. But it's that thing of like, ultimately something has to give. Who's going to win? Is it going to be Ratched or Murphy?
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's it was never going to be Murphy.
Nope. Like, never going to win.
It's but then it's almost like that weird kind of like quasi Christ-like story of like, yeah, it's almost like Murphy lost himself, but the others find themselves in, yeah, that, and it's incredibly powerful but sad. Goodbye.
Say goodbye. That ends our top five goodbyes. We'll say goodbye to the goodbyes.
Goodbye.
And we'll move on to some movie news.
Movie news.
Obviously, there's been a lot of news since the last time.
Yeah, quite a bit in the
quite
year.
A bit of news.
Yeah.
So basically, just sort of new films that are coming up soon. Saw a trailer for Dark Phoenix.
Yeah.
Didn't even know it was coming out.
Neither did I. I've got to say, I've kind of dropped off the radar, I think, quite a lot. Yeah. I remember when we first started this podcast, I was going to see like 4 or 5 films a week.
Yeah.
Maybe not in the cinema, but certainly watching stuff at home or whatever.
He got so bad, he was going down back alleyways looking at the DVD players. I've got some great Korean stuff here, mate. You want to have a look?
Just let me watch a little clip, please.
Just a trailer.
But like times change, like life's moving on and stuff like that. And yep. I it's been so long. We'll come on to this in like films we've seen or like highlights or whatever from the past year. But I there's so much that I just haven't seen anymore. Yep. And like the amount of superhero movies still, I'm lost. It's like I can't mental. Keep tabs,
yep,
on how many are coming out. I've got no idea how many or how deep we are into the whole Justice League universe thing. I don't know what's been out or what hasn't been out. And I try and watch them every now and again, like if I'm traveling on the train or whatever. But
yeah,
all the big ones from this year, Black Panther, Avengers Infinity War, Ant-Man and the Wasp, I haven't seen any of those.
Nope.
And to be honest, I've got no real interest. I watched on a train ride back to Glasgow, this would be a couple of months ago, I did end up watching Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Yeah.
This has kind of turned into the what we've seen section, but I'm trying to make a point.
Yeah.
And this wouldn't have been part of my reviews because it was garbage. But I was just like, I remember loving and being so impressed with the first Guardians of the Galaxy. And then watching this, just being like, you're trying to do the same thing again, but bigger and louder. And it just doesn't work. Like, none of it has the heart. And it just, they're so homogenous. So, but to get back to the thing with Dark Phoenix, it's interesting though, because I think because X-Men was pretty much the first superhero movie at like turn of the century.
Proper, yeah.
So it's like 2000, yeah, the first one came out, yeah, I think. And then Spider-Man came out maybe the same year. The Sam Raimi one, the first one.
Yeah.
So there's weirdly a kind of soft spot, I think, for X-Men rather than all these never-ending.
Yeah, because they were never folded in or rebooted.
Yeah, properly. Exactly. So it'll be interesting. And also, I really like Sophie Turner. Like, I'm a big fan of Game of Thrones, and she's
just finished watching it all.
Grown into such an integral character in that show, where she was kind of more of a bit part story early on. She's an incredibly important character now, and really good actress as well. She's like grown into the role and stuff. So it's nice to see her get a bit of a shout. But are you excited for it?
No, not at all. I was just like, oh well.
Yeah.
Just like, it's not the hot Jean Grey.
Famke Janssen.
Oh, it's all down to GoldenEye.
Yes.
Yeah. Moving on from there.
Very good, Mr. Bond.
Very good. Xena on the top.
On the top?
Xena on the top.
Wait.
What? Duh. Venom.
Yeah. It looks like a PlayStation game.
It doesn't look good, does it?
Nah, and when I first heard that Tom Hardy was going to be doing it, I was like, that would be cool. I also think they totally ballsed up the Venom character in Spider-Man 3.
Oh, yeah.
It was Topher Grace that was playing him, and they wanted to make Sam Raimi was never a fan of Venom, so that's why he didn't want to make the film about Venom. But the studio forced him to because they wanted dark Spider-Man. Like, everybody goes dark in the third movie, right? And that was kind of where it came to. So it was just such a mishmash. But yeah, the trailer looks like...
Venom was really good in the cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just like, whoa, it's really bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just looks a bit... You've seen the pictures of Venom, but where they've made him with real eyes instead of the white eyes.
No.
Looks really freaky. Really freaky.
Yeah.
So Venom, Dark Phoenix. The other thing that I really, that tickled me the other day, it's not really news, but it was the Twitter thread that I think I forwarded you about Mary Poppins.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, some of these were brilliant.
The Mary Poppins Returns trailer coming up, which actually looks really good. You've got a cold, cold heart, Finn.
No, I just, again, like, they're trying to recreate something which I think is very difficult to do. And also, I really like Emily Blunt. I've talked about her so many times. I think she's great as an action star,
yeah.
as an actress. But I don't, like, a lot of the decisions, even from the trailer, have kind of baffled me.
Yeah.
Like, there's a bit, for some reason, in the trailer, she talks like she's incredibly posh. Like,
it is a bit weird voice.
And I was like, Julia Andrews never talked like that.
No.
And then I don't know if it's going to be the kind of Bert character.
Yeah.
But there's like a cool blimey chimney sweep.
What?
This is 1960s London. Were there still chimney sweeps then?
It's the 30s.
Was it the 30s?
Yeah.
So when's the original set?
1906 or something like that.
Oh, right. Okay. I thought
suffragettes
it was
and all that.
Yeah. I thought that was the 20s.
No, it's earlier than that.
Okay.
So I'll just read some of these out. So Mary Poppins. Mary Poppins Returns. Mary Poppins Forever. Mary Poppins and Robin. Mary Poppins Begins. The Flying Nanny. The Flying Nanny Rises. And then Mary Poppins versus Nanny McPhee, Dawn of Justice.
Yeah, that was my favourite one. Absolute favourite.
And I was just scrolling through here. Some other people have chipped in. Mary Poppins 2, Tokyo Drift. Oh, God, there's some other ones in here.
Surely somebody must have gone down the route of Mary Poppins 2, Poppins Harder.
Oh, this one was good. Mary Poppins and the Au-pair's Stone. Mary Poppins and the Chamber of Chalk. Mary Poppins and the Prisoner of Time Out. Mary Poppins and the Goblet of Sugar. Mary Poppins and the Order of the Phoenix. Mary Poppins and the Half-Burt Prince. Mary Poppins and the Most Delightful Hallows. Oh, someone did one about... oh, God. They're just too funny. And I'm... Well, yeah, here's the Fast and the Furious. The Mary and the Poppins. Two Mary, two Poppins. The Mary... And the Poppins Tokyo Drift. Mary and the Poppins. Mary 5. Mary and Poppins 6. Poppins 7. The Fate of the Poppins. Oh. I'll do one more. Yeah, this was my favourite. Mary Poppins The Motion Picture. Wrath of Mary Poppins.
Be Star Trek.
Yeah, Wrath of Mary Poppins. Search for Mary Poppins. Mary Poppins Voyage Home. Final Mary Poppins Frontier. Undiscovered Mary Poppins Country, Mary Poppins Generations, Insurrection Nemesis, blah, blah, blah.
That's so good.
When I was reading that, it was just absolutely...
There used to be a thread with that in Scotland, which was that you'd replace one word of a movie with jobby, which
yes.
is the Glasgow word for a poo.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
So, single monosyllabic movie titles like Jaws just become jobby, which is hilarious. So you can have like a big steaming turd like rising to the surface as well. But you could have Jurassic Jobby, you could have Jobby Hard,
the Italian Jobby.
Oh, very good.
Very good.
Or the Jobby Job.
The Jobby Job.
The possibilities are endless. It's a very fun, amuse yourselves. You can have that one, that's free.
Yeah. Oh, I love stuff like that. So let's move to films we've seen. And the last film that we saw together was Solo.
It was.
Featuring someone we know.
Well, yeah. One of my really good friends ended up being the body double for the reshoots of Solo.
Which is crazy.
Which is crazy.
And then he was tapping people's legs in the cinema, so then we knew when he was on screen, we get a tap on the leg.
Well, what we tried to do as well, so JQ was there and kind of helped us film it. He didn't get an official credit because for some reason, although there's like, you know, the person who got the sandwiches for the accountant somewhere, they get a credit. It's only the body double that has spent the most time on set that gets the credit. There's only one credit. Which seems ridiculous.
Yeah.
So he didn't get an actual credit in the movie, which is a bit of a shame because he was on set for But 6 weeks, like, Jesus. Of reshoots, yeah. Wow. And like was on set with like Ron Howard, yeah. and Emilia Clarke and Woody Harrelson and all that kind of stuff. It was like full on. And it was just cool. he sent me a picture on set, well, not on set, but in his trailer, in his changing room, of him in the full solo garb, which if he'd been caught, he would have been fired.
Yeah.
Like, you can't send that out. But he was kind of giggling as he was taking it, just being like, what is life? This is ridiculous. Yesterday, I was asked to come in a movie, and it turns out it's the Han Solo movie. Because obviously they don't tell you it's the Han Solo movie, just because he has the exact same kind of height and weight and dimensions and fits of clothes of Aldrin Elric.
Yes,
That he's exact same proportions as him, so they just wanted somebody to come in and stand. But it's quite cool because you can actively notice when it's Dan.
Really?
Like, now that he's said, like, this is my bit, or I'm in this scene.
Yeah.
So basically anything that's like a kind of hand close up in the gambling scenes or the opening scene with the whole big snake woman thing is all Dan. So any shots from behind is all Dan. It's really cool.
I think he did a good job though.
Yeah. So for the movie itself, what did you actually think?
I loved it.
Yeah.
It's annoying that it didn't do well.
Yeah.
What's his name? Who's the bad guy? Vision.
Paul Bettany.
Yeah. He's great.
Oh, he's tremendous. But he's good in everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a great bad guy.
Mm. I think the thing with Solo, I thought they did a really good job. For what they had, they did a really good job. And there's some great set pieces in there.
The big worm monster going in there.
Yeah.
Gravity well.
And the, you kind of get to see the genesis of these legends, like running, doing the Kessler, running 12 parsecs, all that kind of stuff. But I think it just all feels a bit like, did we need to see that? That was my biggest thing. It's just like, the coolest thing about Han Solo is that he's kind of mercurial. You don't know really his backstory and what's true and what's not true. Like, it's all conjecture, and he might just be putting it on. It might just be bravado. He might be that cool. I mean, he is that cool. But so to see a Genesis movie is like, there's this Hollywood thing of like, they'll always try and give you backstory, backstory, backstory. And sometimes you don't need it. Like, I think one of the best examples of that is the Joker from The Dark Knight. He doesn't have an origin, or you don't know where he comes from or who he is. But that's what makes it so menacing, because you've got, he's unhinged. You know, no fingerprints, no other aliases.
Yeah.
All we find on him are knives and lint. Like, that's it. Custom-made clothing. It's just, that's so brilliant. But, you know, if that wasn't, if that was a Disney studio that had made that Batman movie, we'd be getting Joker's origin now, which, interestingly enough, we are getting.
Yes.
You know, with Joaquin Phoenix.
Joaquin.
Taking over.
Which looks awful from the pictures I've seen so far.
Yeah, I mean, I really like Joaquin Phoenix, but the biggest thing for me is it's directed by Todd Phillips. I was like, sorry, the guy from The Hangover and The Hangover 2 and The Hangover 3 and Old School and Road Trip or whatever else.
Is it going to be a comedy?
I was just like,
I hope not.
Really? So yeah.
So you didn't like Solo?
No, I did.
Okay.
I did enjoy it, but it just felt a bit like, did we need to see it? I don't know. I don't think it would have harmed the Star Wars universe for us not to have seen that.
No, but I am looking forward to an Obi-Wan Kenobi film.
Yeah, really?
Ian McGregor?
Again, for the same reason, I'm just like, there's so much more of the Star Wars universe to tell. Why do we have to keep going and retreading over the same stories and characters
we've always done? What would be your ultimate Star Wars next film?
Next one.
Yeah, there's a backstory that you want to see.
I would. So I think this is something I actually talked about like years and years ago. There was an incredible series of computer games called Knights of the Old Republic.
Yes.
Which is set like thousands of years before Darth Vader.
Yeah.
I'd love to see something in that.
Right.
Like the genesis of the Jedi myth or the Sith. Like, where did they come from? Why did that happen? I would love to see that. Or just branching out into different parts of the universe. Why does it always have to be centered around the Skywalkers or Solo or, you know? But I enjoyed it.
Familiarity is key.
I think so, maybe.
Mando was great.
To go and do something else.
But other films I've seen.
Mm.
I've seen Avengers Infinity War.
No, I haven't seen that.
It's good. The weird thing about it, there's a whole scene set in Edinburgh with Vision and Scarlet Witch, and they have a fight in Waverley Station.
Who's Vision?
Paul Bettany.
Right.
And Captain America comes along with these two alien guys and they smash up the train station.
Uh-huh.
And then when I went to Edinburgh for the Fringe, I got to the train station and they're rebuilding the train station. And I'd just seen the film. So it was like, I'd watched the film and then destroying it and I go to Edinburgh and they're now rebuilding it.
Yeah, yeah.
It was really bizarre.
That's amazing. There is that thing though where like of the few times I've gone in and out of Edinburgh,
yeah.
They've been building that station my entire life.
Oh yeah.
I also, it's probably... I've got the Glasgow bias because that's where I'm from, but
of course.
Edinburgh Waverley Station makes no sense. Like platform 16 is not next to platform 15 or whatever.
It's
like,
not?
Well, there's like 16 to 13 are on one side. Then you've got like 8, 9 and 10 in the middle and yeah. Then you've got the lower platform somewhere else. And it's like, it feels like about six different train stations glued together.
I only travel international, darling. I've never done local routes. Mm. Never done local routes. Ready Player One?
I haven't seen it.
Don't bother.
Okay.
It's just... It's really long, but it needs another hour.
Really?
Because it just makes no sense.
Okay.
There's just nothing really happens.
Yeah.
Which is bizarre because Spielberg is the master.
Yeah.
Yet this is just pointless. Summer Pegg's in it, which is fine.
Yeah.
And the BFG, but apart from that, it's just like... rubbish. A Quiet Place...
is that the one with
the silent one where everyone has to be quiet for as
yeah.
comes along?
Is that good? Because that actually looked really good.
It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's John Krasinski directed that
yeah.
as well as starred in it with his wife.
Yeah.
Emily Blunt. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really good.
Cool.
Very good. Isle of Dogs.
I haven't seen that.
Very good.
You're massive into your Wes Anderson, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah. the kids called it the film about the dogs down the tip.
Well, when I first heard he was making a film called Isle of Dogs.
Yeah.
Isle of Dogs is an area of London right next to Canary Wharf.
Yep. Well, they made it in East London.
Really?
The film, yeah.
But it's just, Isle of Dogs, I just thought, he's making a... So I couldn't get that it was a stop animation.
Yeah.
Actually about dogs.
Yeah.
It wasn't about, you know, the Docklands in London.
It's very bizarre.
Mm.
Justice League?
I haven't seen it.
It was... better than I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
Because who's the guy that did First Avengers?
Josh Whedon.
Josh Whedon, yeah. So he took over and did a lot of the film. So the back half feels like an Avengers film.
Right.
Okay. So it actually works quite well. I quite liked it. But the whole DC universe is pretty rubbish. Greatest Showman?
That I have seen. I really enjoyed it. It's not you. I would never have had you. I would never have thought.
I got forced along to it.
Yeah, that sounds about right. that is not a film I would ever expect you to be like, I'm going to see The Greatest Showman.
Oh, it didn't get his adamantium claws out, though. I was quite disappointed.
Yeah.
Very disappointed.
But I really enjoyed it. I think if you go with it as a spectacle, it's really good fun. The music in it is really good fun.
Yeah. This is why we're stopping this podcast. Deadpool 2.
I haven't seen it.
Brilliant.
Okay.
Have you seen Deadpool 1?
Yes.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
You know the bit with the hand?
Yeah.
They take that up to the next level.
Okay.
And it's just... everyone in the cinema was crying with laughter.
Okay.
It was so good. Definitely watch that one.
I think against the backdrop of all these never-ending superhero movies coming out, Deadpool was such a welcome antidote to all that, the first one. I haven't seen the second one, but I very much intend to.
Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah.
What else have you seen?
So I went through on the Wikipedia list of 2018 in film.
Yeah.
Because the last time we recorded was the tail end of December.
Yeah.
And I have seen a grand total of four films on that list.
Gee, that is poor for you.
That is poor.
That would have been a normal week.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Okay.
But yeah, it's just a lot. I think because I feel, you know, like work's pretty busy, life's pretty busy and stuff like that. It's got to be something that you feel is going to be worth the effort.
Yeah.
That you feel is going to be worth an investment of not just 20, 25 quid, which is what it costs to go to the cinema now, but 3-4 hours of your evening.
Yep.
And just like when you look through some of the stuff and then you watch the trailers, I'm just like, I've got no interest in that whatsoever. Like, I've heard really good things about Black Panther, but I'm just like, it's another
superhero. It's a fine film. It's been done 100 times before.
Yeah, but that's it. But these every single Marvel movie, and branching out from that, it's like an identikit.
Yeah.
Superhero movie.
Yeah.
So you know exactly what's going to happen and which characters are going to die, even if you've never met them before, and which ones are going to survive, and who the bad guy is going to turn out to be later on. And
there's a brilliant picture of the main guy from Black Panther at a premiere doing the cross arm thing, looking really happy. And then there's another picture of him doing this cross arm thing, looking really miserable. And underneath it says, first day at work, last day at work.
Yeah. It is, but it's just, but even outside of that, like, also as well, like, I kind of enjoyed the first Ant-Man. I don't really need to feel the need to see any more of the Ant-Man story. So Ant-Man and Wasp, like, who cares? And even Jurassic Park came out this year, Fallen Kingdom.
Yeah.
No interest. Did you see the trailer?
Yeah, I went to the cinema to see that.
You went to the cinema to see it?
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah. Flawed, but it was all right.
Nah, it looks dreadful.
Nah, mate.
Like Ocean's 8 as well.
No, I didn't see that.
But it falls into that same thing of just... It feels like at large, this feels like such a pathetic rant to have, but I think there's genuine grounds for it where I'm just like, there's no invention, I think, in a lot of the cinema stories. It's the same stuff we've seen 100 times before. And it's just, I think especially in this age when television is so good, it's like, why would you spend your time going to the cinema to see this stuff?
I've been watching a lot of telly.
And even I put up a couple of shelves in our flat, and I was putting out all the DVDs I've got. I know it's a dead media.
Yeah.
JQ ribbed me
DVDs.
For that. Yeah, but it's just like, it's almost like it's your book collection or something like that. It's like your film education on the wall kind of thing.
Did you do it in alphabetical?
I did, yeah.
Or, what was the one, that's the line from...
High Fidelity.
Yeah.
Yeah, chronological by purchase.
Autobiographical.
Autobiographical. So like, you need to remember where you bought it. Yeah. The weird thing is I can remember where I bought most of them and how much they cost roughly. But it was like going through it and like even just seeing like, I really hope this isn't tinted by that nostalgia that I made reference to earlier on. But you just look at some of the films that I've got where I've like, it's been years since something... One of the ones that stood out to me was School of Rock. I was like, it's not an amazing film. It's not the best film ever made, but it's brilliant. And it stood the test of time. That film's 15 years old now. People still talk about it or watch it or whatever.
It's on TV. Musical on in London now.
Yeah. But why? Because it was original.
Yeah.
Like, because it was a simple premise, but done brilliantly well.
Yeah.
You know, a guy pretends to be a school teacher, starts a rock band with the school kids. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Or Bill and Ted. It's like...
Me and Lucy sat down and watched both Bill and Ted's.
Mm.
She loved them.
They're great.
Yep.
But I it's that thing of like, if you imagine somebody now going into a studio to say, can we have $15 million to make a movie about two dropout surfer dudes who want to be in a band?
Yeah.
But their band is going to be so important to human history that they will solve world peace and align the planets. We need to get them to do it. So we need to send them through history to do their history report. That wouldn't get made.
And they're making the third one.
Oh, but yeah.
Hopefully.
Which is, yeah. we don't need to see it. It's the point's been made. But, like Terminator, we were talking about Terminator. Mm. Simple idea done fantastically well. But it's just, it's all regurgitated and it's so dull. Ocean's 8 was that thing as well, where you know how much I love the remake of Ocean's 11, the George Clooney Brad Pitt one from 2001. And I'm like, I am all for 100% all for seeing an entire female cast making a heist movie. Why does she have to be Danny Ocean's sister? Like, why are you just retreading the same stuff? Make something different. I would love to see an all-female cast about a supernatural comedy in New York. It doesn't have to be this weird quasi-crapness that was Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, just there's no invention in it. It's just really sad to see. Having said that, like, weirdly, one of the films that I did enjoy a lot this year, although I think it's slightly different in that regard, was Mission Impossible Fallout.
Oh, so good.
But the thing is, I think the reason that that's so good, or there's the longevity in certain ones of these franchises, like Fast and Furious would be another one for me,
mm-hmm.
is because they know what they are, but they are all different. And the great thing about Mission Impossible is that they always take different directors, they try and incorporate different stuff. And for me, the real boon was bringing back Sean Harris. Was it Sean Harris is the name of the actor? The kind of gingery guy that's in the straight jacket for a lot of it.
I've watched all the films, can't remember a single thing about all the other ones. So I kind of got a bit lost watching
But he's
it.
He's incredible. Like a really astounding actor. And just to see him come back as well. And it was great. And it's so clever because with a Mission Impossible film, you're always thinking, where's the double switch?
Yeah.
Oh, that switch is a switch of a switch.
Yeah.
And it still keeps you guessing. And it's just, it's so much fun. So I would recommend that one if you haven't seen that.
Oh, I have. I saw it at the cinema. And of course,
yeah.
No one can act as well as Alec Baldwin.
No, they goddamn can. it's so good.
Oh, if you like Alec Baldwin, watch him in Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Oh, yeah.
He's brilliant on it.
Yeah, he's incredibly funny.
Yeah, he's really funny.
Because he was in, have you seen much of 30 Rock?
Yeah, no, I've never seen it.
He's good. but yeah, the only other two films that were on the list that I can remember seeing were Tomb Raider.
Did you see really?
That? Yeah.
You used up one of your four for Tomb Raider?
No, but my wife's like...
an archaeologist.
but she really likes Alicia Vikander like the whole kind of like, you know, girl Indiana Jones type adventure thing. So we went to go and see it, and obviously I was a big fan of the computer games growing up. but it's just all the ingredients were there, and the story is terrible. It is so
worse
bad.
Than the original. With Rimmer?
Yeah, they weren't good. But I think they're okay, kind of like a Sunday afternoon movies. I just think when you've got an Oscar-winning actress doing this, and again, it's the potential, because the games are brilliant. Even if you tried to copy bits from the computer games.
Yeah.
Like, it would be...
Because they did that in the Batman, didn't they? Batman versus Superman, they copied a bit from a game.
Games and obviously the source material, but the Tomb Raider 2 was the first one I remember playing on the PlayStation, and it's just, it's fascinating. It's about like this whole kind of this guy searching for immortality, and there's this whole kind of like search for this dagger that will give him everlasting life if he pierces his heart with it and stuff. He turns into like a dragon and stuff, and it's mental, but it's amazing, and it all makes sense. And they just didn't get the character at all, because in some bits I get it's a Genesis movie, but like she's phenomenally like too intelligent to figure something out. Because it'd be like, no matter if you're Batman, you're not figuring out as quickly as the character does. But the reason she does is because the story needs to move along. For no other reason. But then there's other bits where you're like, if you're that smart in that bit, why are you so dumb in the next bit? And it's a shame, because Alicia Vikander does the best that she can do with a fairly dreadful script. It's got Dominic West in it, whose character turns into that weird Ray Winston pantomime weirdo from Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the ETs or whatever it was.
Nothing personal, Indy.
Oh, it's so bad. so Tomb Raider is okay. It's fine, like, for what it is, but it's just, it felt like such a wasted opportunity, because I remember being so excited when they announced they were remaking it. They were doing a Genesis story, which again they've made a video game on, which is pretty good. And they cast Alicia Vikander, and it's terrible. It is so bad. But the only other film that I've seen this year in the cinemas was Hereditary, which was a horror movie.
Oh, is that any good?
Yeah, up to a point.
Right.
So it's made by A24, who are a really exciting kind of production company. They're making a lot of really cool kind of like almost underground type movies.
Okay.
Horror films and stuff. Yeah. They did a phenomenal horror movie which came out a few years ago called The Witch, which starred... have you ever seen The Office?
No, but I did want to see the film. Is it good?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Hugely unsettling. Like,
is it?
Yeah. Not scary as in like, whoa, kind of scares, but it massively unsettling. Well worth a watch. And acted brilliantly. So it has Kate Dickey, who's in Game of Thrones and Red Road, a Scottish actress, really, really good. It's got Ralph Ineson, who, if anybody's ever watched the UK version of The Office, he plays Finchie, like the huge, big, tall
rat. Oh, yeah, right.
And he does a lot of the voiceover work now in the UK. Yeah.
He's in Game of Thrones, wasn't he?
Yes, yes,
it must
have
been, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he, they're kind of like a family, a Puritan family, so like massively religious, who've been moved from kind of medieval England as one of the first kind of pilgrims or sets of pilgrims in the States. They're trying to make their own land and stuff. And they feel like there's the kind of religious imagery that's that kind of hamstrings their entire lives, kind of gets questioned further by what they think is a witch in the woods. And it's, oh, it's incredible. Anyway, this wasn't that. This was a kind of had the same kind of vibe. And what I really liked is that it was a horror film. It wasn't going for the cheap scares that I call them. Like, which is like, quiet, kind of like, you know, things. But it was just really creepy. Like, yeah, really good. And it's got like that weird child actress who's terrifying but brilliant. Kind of bug-eyed. Like, I wouldn't say ugly. It's she's not ugly, but just interesting looking.
Yeah.
Like, not your typical kind of like.
Been like you and me.
Yeah, interesting, but that kind of adds to this whole like kind of unsettling nature of it, and it doesn't go the way you think it's going to go. But then the final third of it just felt a bit cliched.
Right,
it's like it for two thirds of the movie, it had set up this really brilliant film that you hope is going to be settled in a good way, and it just kind of isn't. It kind of tapers off towards the end. In the context of most other films that I've seen. Or that have come out this year, I would definitely recommend it though, because it is different. It's interesting.
I'll add it to my little list of films to watch. There's a couple. I've been watching some trailers recently. I'm a fan of Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
I like Talladega Nights. I like Anchorman. He's now doing Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
Victorian Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
Have you seen the trailer?
I haven't seen the trailer. But John C. Reilly's in it, right?
Yeah.
The thing is, it can't be any worse than the Guy Ritchie movies.
I think it could be. In the trailer, they make the joke. Someone says to Sherlock Holmes, "Oh, no shit, Sherlock." And I reckon they just made the film just so they could say that line. It just looks awful.
Yeah.
Oh, God. What else did I see a trailer for? Yeah, Rocket Man. The Elton John biopic with the guy from Kingsman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know enough about Elton John to know whether it's any good or not.
Yeah, I thought that looked quite good. I'd be up for seeing what that's like.
Yeah.
I actually went to a recording of the Empire podcast where he was the guest, and that's what he was talking about.
Cool.
Because he was filming at the time. And it sounds quite interesting. And obviously, because they have that kind of crossover from Kingsman 2. Which Elton John is in.
Oh, of course, yeah.
So
they
kind of had talked about it a bit then and stuff. And yeah, I think it'd be quite good. The one that I'm really excited to see actually is the Freddie Mercury biopic.
See, it doesn't interest Remy Malek. I'm not really into biopics.
I quite like them.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Because I'm just going, that's not Freddie Mercury. It's not Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, but he sounds really like him. Obviously, they're using the music of Queen.
Yeah.
But his accent and stuff and the kind of prosthetic teeth, because they've given him that kind of like butt teeth. Thing, he looks and sounds really like him.
There's a guy that lives around the corner from me that's the lead guitarist in a Queen tribute band.
Oh, amazing.
Called the Bohemians.
You feel like there'd be a better name than that, surely.
Well, someone else has already taken it, probably.
Yeah.
The Queens?
Well, I can't think of any off the top of my head right now.
There you go, maybe they've got a good one.
I know you don't like football, but I feel like I should mention this. At the start of every season, so me and my friends play this thing called fantasy football. So you kind of make your team, and you're given a certain budget, and the best players are more expensive. So you kind of need to mediate between which expensive players you're going to put in, which crappy players you're going to put in. And they earn points depending on how many goals they score or passes they make or clean sheets, whatever. Anyway, one of the best parts of it is picking your team name at the start, and a lot of people use puns on player names, which are meaningless if you're not a football fan. But there's a brilliant one, you might not have heard of them, but they're a very famous Italian football team called AC Milan.
Yes,
very famous football team. But somebody had made a fantasy football team name which was AC A Little Silhouette of Milan, and I think that is the best fantasy football team name of all time.
Amazing.
Yeah, I've actually tend to find that I'm watching more TV shows than I am
it's
movies.
So good.
Now. And there's some really good ones.
Did you watch Bodyguard?
Yes, very I'm good. Only two episodes into that one at the moment. But
it's a bit it's weird really with his good. Scottish accent. So I was like, is he putting that on?
No, that's where he's from. I mean, he's slightly posher than that in real life. So he is putting on the more gruff side. But I think that's to do with the character. He's meant to be ex-army, a bit more working class and all that kind of stuff. But he's from a town called Eldersley, which is right next to the one that I used to live in for years when I was a kid. So yeah, it's he's really good. I'm glad as well because he was excellent in Game of Thrones.
Yes.
And he's been in one or two movies or TV shows since then that haven't really taken off.
Because I was watching Bodyguard and thinking, did the writer look at Theresa May as Home Secretary and thought, you know what I want to do?
I severely doubt it. Unless it was written by Boris Johnson. It's what I liked about it, though, is... my wife and I, we watched through Jack Ryan on Amazon Prime.
Any good?
Yes. I know.
I get confused with Jack Reacher.
Yes. So it's 8 episodes, the first season. It's worth watching, definitely. Yeah. But the first episode and the last episode are the most disappointing ones, I'd say.
Really?
Because they're the most tropey, if that makes sense. So. Yeah. And it's interesting, having watched Jack Ryan and now watching through The Bodyguard, you've kind of got like both of the main male leads are ex-military, suffering from PTSD, trying to figure out how to live a normal life around about that. And there's only so many shots you can see of John Krasinski getting out of bed at 2 a.m., you know, big broad shoulders, as you can see his scars and stuff. Like that shot, I'm not joking, is in every single episode of the 8, sometimes twice.
Wow.
And I really like John Krasinski, but I don't know if he's quite right for that role. He just doesn't feel quite like an action hero. I mean, he looks the part.
Yeah.
He doesn't quite feel like it. But the most impressive thing about Jack Ryan was, for me, the kind of, the bad guy, so to speak, in inverted commas, because it's the best I've ever seen somebody deal with both sides of the coin. So the guy's kind of like a fundamentalist Islamist, and he's plotting things to do. But they give such great attention to the backstory and to the detail that he's actually the most interesting character. And I think his side of the story is so interesting. I don't want to spoil it, but there's basically... the final episode of season one, you're just like, it felt like it was an episode of 24. You're just like, but taking itself too seriously. The great thing about 24 was it kind of, you kind of always felt like it had its tongue in its cheek going through it. So it's worth watching, but watching through The Bodyguard now, it's just like, this is infinitely better straight away. Like the whole opening scene in the train.
Yeah.
It's so tense.
Yeah, I can see lots of flaws with the actual sets and all that. But apart from that, it's good. Mm. They filmed it near where, in the Forest of Dean somewhere.
Okay.
So I'm just like, I've got the train from there. Well, there's a bit in the last episode where he walks out of one building.
No spoilers.
There's no spoilers, but he walks out of one building. I'm like, I know exactly where that building is. And in the next shot, he's outside another building. I'm like, that is half an hour on the bus away from where you were just now. Yeah. You couldn't have got there in your state.
That's one thing, just going back to... Mission Impossible Fallout. It was very good because the geography of London was brilliant in
they
that.
They did. They shortened the distance between St. Paul's and the building next to it.
Yeah.
Because it's a long distance, but there's very...
But like the whole running across Blackfriars Station and then going into the Tate, which is kind of the other side.
Oh, wait a minute. I haven't got it on longitude. Oh, no. Need to go down. And you can see him breaking his ankle as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And limping away.
It just while we're on Tom Cruise, I've remembered one other film I did see recently, which was The Going Clear, the Scientology documentary.
Oh, is it any good?
It's amazing.
Yeah?
Amazing.
Okay.
You should watch that.
Right.
Appalling. No, but I mean, like, once you see what it is and how it happened and stuff. And it actually gave me a greater appreciation, I think, for The Master, Paul Thomas Anderson movie, Philip Seymour Hoffman, that I kind of dismissed, I didn't really enjoy, but I may go and revisit that. So, yeah,
there you go.
I recommend that one too. Mm.
And like everything, it has to have a goodbye.
It does.
And that means it's the end of this episode and of this season of the Movie Digest.
It's been a long old season, this one.
Finley, it's been a pleasure.
Five years worth. 5 years, yeah. January 2013 is when we started. I always like ending these things by quoting Jim Lovell, which is Tom Hanks' character from Apollo 13, where he just looks right into the other guys before he, before they're about to re-enter Earth's atmosphere.
Yeah.
He might be incinerated because the heat shield's been damaged. He just looks to his side and he says, "Gentlemen, it's been a privilege flying with you."
Finn, it's been a privilege podding with you. And at the same time, someone was leaving the office as we were doing that. Well, that's it for this
season
of Movie Digest. I've been JQ.
And I've been Finn.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.